Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Ksuvos is daf Tzadi Hei. We're concluding the 10th parak of the Masechta. Thank the Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is known as Zecher Nishmas Liba Gabriela Bashmuel. Okay, after having covered on Wednesday the Mishnah that relates to bankruptcy and the collection of bankruptcy and the formula for collection of bankruptcy, we then moved on to a case on the bottom of Tzadi Gimel Amud Beis, having to do with a man married to four women. He dies. And in the Mishnah on Tzadi Gimel Amud Beis talks about a very straightforward scenario where each one of them married on a different day, so each one of them has a ksuva that's dated in succession, one earlier than the other. So basically, first lien holder, second lien holder, third lien holder, and fourth lien holder. So as the man is now dead, and each one of them is looking to collect their ksuva, so obviously the woman who got married and who is first went into this marriage, so she's a first lien holder, so therefore that entitles her to collect. She's going to have to make a shvua. The shvua that she's going to make to the others is that I took nothing else. He didn't leave anything for me before he died, meaning I'm entitled to the full ksuva amount. And then, so when she collects, she makes a shvua. The second one collects, she's also going to make a shvua. Same is true with the third, and same is true with the fourth as well. Sorry, let me hold off on the fourth. Right. And now we get to the fourth woman. The fourth woman now is coming to collect her ksuva. So at this point in time now, no one's behind her. No one's waiting in line behind her. And so, good, she'll be able to collect her ksuva. Does she need to make a shvua? So this we saw in the Mishnah is a machlokas between the Tanakama and Ben Nanas. Tanakama says, no need to make a shvua. There's nobody to make a shvua to. Who's waiting behind her? Good.
What about the Yorshim?
The Yorshim... Yeah. She has to. Oh, okay, fine. Good. Stay. Okay, very good. Okay, so then Ben Anna says no. She has to make a shvua. Good. Adkan. That's the Mishnah. To which the Gemara asks a very simple question: what's the machlokas? What are they arguing about? About the fourth woman, whether or not when she collects she has to make a shvua or not. So the Gemara proposed three different ways to resolve this issue of whether she has to make a shvua. So. One issue suggests the Gemara, one way to reconcile the issue is, look, it's true that the lien holder obviously is last in line, but what if she cuts the line? What if she goes ahead and she takes a little bit earlier in her turn? The Mishnah creates a somewhat more complicated scenario in which you would cut her line. Let's say, for example, said the Mishnah that one of the properties didn't really belong to the husband, so one of those properties were taken away. So after one, two, and three collected, and now number four collected, and one of the earlier properties were taken away, so really what should happen is that now the property should be reassigned. In other words, so now because one of the properties are no longer there, so we should look at the women and each one of their positions in terms of the lien holders, and we should say, okay, the property taken away, good. That's no longer in the discussion. So once again, let's go back to the first one should take her first, second one should take the second, third one should take the third, and now the fourth one, if she took a property, it's going to be taken away from her because she was last in line. And the question is, and it's a question that we dealt with earlier in the Masechta, is that if you have a later shibud and you collect, so obviously what you did, you shouldn't have done that. But is it well, after the fact, but the evidence, is that acceptable? So the Gemara says that could be one machlokus between the Tanakhama and Benanas. So Benanas is of the opinion that Masha Asa Asui, what's done is done, and so therefore she's going to have to make a shvua that fourth woman, because there is a very good, not good possibility, but there is a possibility that that one of the earlier wives are going to come after her for that property. So that's one possible, one way to explain the machlokus. Another way to explain the machlokus is, if you don't make the fourth woman swear, so what's going to happen? So that means that she looks at her position as a very tenuous position. And what's going to end up happening is that, given the responsibility of taking care of that property, she may not take good care of the property. So maybe another way to explain the machlokas is that Benanis has a fourth woman swear, so that in the event that she's given the property, she'll take good care of the property. Why? Because it's motivational, psychological. You swear over a piece of property that you're entitled to that property, it gets you more invested in the property, and you'll take better care of it. That's another way to explain the machlokas. And finally, the Gemara presented a third way to explain the machlokas, and this is quoted in the name of Abai Kashisha. He says that the machlokas between the Tanakhama and Benanas is a very simple machlokas, and that is when you collect from orphans who are not young, orphans who are older. In other words, we won't call them orphans, we'll just call them adults. Nevertheless, though, you are taking from them something that they inherited from their father. So do I have to make a shvua? We know the halacha is very clear that when you collect from ketan and when you collect from orphans who are minors, so for there you have to make a shvua before you collect, even though you're rightfully entitled to collect. You have a note. You're a lien holder. You have every right to collect, but still you have to make a shvua. But the question is that if you're collecting from gedolim, do you have to make a shvua or not? Abai Kashisha says you do have to make a shvua, and that could be the opinion of Benanis. Benanis also subscribes to that viewpoint as well. So it could very well be that the fourth woman has no competition and no one's behind her, and no one's going to contest her rightful ownership of the land. It's just that anytime you come collect from the heirs, so you have to make a shvua. Okay, so those are three different ways the Gemara presented this machlokas. We are in the middle of Sadi Dala Amud Beis, and we continue.
When he gets married before, he has to come up with one property for each one.
He doesn't have to come up. In other words, all of his properties are secured against the ksuva. So,
but each time that he has a new ksuva, each ksuva he has to allocate the
land. No. The way it works is you get married and all your properties, both current and future holdings, are going to be secured against the ksuva. Gemara goes off on a little bit of a tangent over here. You have partners are on a piece of property, and there's a din, and there's litigation. So, I'm sorry, dina bahadei chad va'azo chad minay bahadei ladina. So now, one of the partners goes to court, and he litigates on behalf of the partnership. Lo mati yidach lamemar le'at la'bal dvarim didi'at elish lichuse aved. So the other partner at this point in time can't say, look, I'm a 50% shareholder of this property, and you want to take us to court. Now, I know you already sat down in court with my partner, but that was my partner. That's not me. In other words, he lost the case, but that doesn't mean I lost the case. So right now, the Gemara is taking the position that you can't say that. You can't say that because when he's going there, he's not only representing himself, he's representing you as well. In other words, you're a partnership, you're partners. So any type of litigation that's done by one of the partners is going to be on behalf of all the partners. Okay, Iklar Rav Nachman Lesura Shailiki I Gavna Mai. Rav Nachman went to the town of Surah and he asked the question. Is that true? Meaning, is this principle true? Now, I know we went off the board right now, we're off tangent, but you will see why the Gemara brings this up right now. Amlu Masisan he, to which the response is, yeah, I think it's true. Meaning, look at our Mishnah. Our Mishnah in Ksufis, again, I made this point the other day. Just think that, meaning while we're learning this Mishnah right now, and while we're like, it's like fresh in our head, so like we can make a connection between this case and our Mishnah. Imagine not learning this Mishnah right now, in other words, having all the Mishnayos at your fingertips, so that anytime you have a halakha question, you can compare it to a Mishnah. That obviously, in other words, that requires a tremendous bekiyus. So he says it's our Mishnah. Because look what happens in our Mishnah. You have four women, each one having a different position of security against their ksuva. And what did the Mishnah say? Mishnah says one swears to two swears to three swears to four. Now the Mishnah doesn't say that one swears to three, even though ultimately one should be swearing to three as well. Meaning one who's going to be taking first should be swearing to every of the other wives, saying, look, this is it. Meaning, I didn't get anything up until now, and therefore I'm entitled to this. If she takes anything more she's entitled to, she's not only going to be affecting the second wife, she'll be affecting the third and fourth as well. And meanwhile, the Mishnah does not describe her making a shvua to the others. So, my time, Allah Mishnah Dishluchus Avdei. So the Gemara says it must be that shlichus, in other words, that the second one is serving as a representation of the third and fourth. Right. Now it's funny, the wives here are being compared to a partnership. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't necessarily compare it to a partnership. In other words, each one of them has their own self-interest, each one of them has their own ksuva. But still, the Gemara is making a comparison based on the fact that if one is swearing to two, one is really swearing to two, three, and four, all through the extension of shlichus. So the Gemara says, "Me dummy." Gemara says, "No, that's not what's happening." Hasam shvul echa shvul ameya. Gemara says, "It's not shlichus. It's that when you make a shvur, you make a shvur to one. You're making a shvur to 100." the Gemara in Shabbos says Ner Lecha Ner Lemeya, right? Okay, based on the issues over there is a different issue, but still, one shvuah covers everybody. Yes, the terminology of the Mishnah is one swearing to two, but really that shvuah also is effective for number three, effective for number four. So the Gemara says that's not an issue of shlichus and hacha, and in fact over here Amar Ilu Anahavai Teina Tvei. Over here, the partner can make a very legitimate claim, and that's as follows. He could say to the partner who did go to court, look, I know you went to court, and I know you litigated, and he could say to the other litigant, you know, I know my partner was with you, but my partner doesn't really know much about law, and he doesn't know much about litigation, and if I were there, I would have done a much better job. And the Gemara is saying, that's an argument. That's a reasonable argument. So at this juncture, the Gemara is saying that, no, unlike the original premise is that when one partner goes in, he's litigating on behalf of the whole partnership. The Gemara is now saying not necessarily. In other words, the other partner does have a right to make a claim that he would have done a better job. But again, the Gemara says, but with one provision. And that's the following. The Gemara says, but look, the partner who didn't come to court, that argument that he makes, that I could have been done a better job and I could have made a stronger argument, that only has validity if he was out of town. But if he was in town, and he obviously, assuming he knew that there was litigation taking place, and he didn't come to court, so that's going to be a default assumption that the partner was going to be arguing on behalf of the partnership. And so if he really felt like he could have done a better job, he should have gone to court, and he didn't. And so therefore the Gemara says that's an important provision on this idea. Itmar, the Gemara continues, it says, let's say you have two documents and they are dated the same date. Right, a field was sold, and it was sold to two, same field, and it was sold to two parties, and we're looking at the deed, and the deed is dated the same date, and so now it's a very simple question of, well, who do I give it to? So this is a very simple question, and it's a very basic machlokas. Rav Amar Chokin, Shmuel Amar Shuda Dedaini. So Rav says, we're going to take the land, and we're going to divide it. Okay, Rav's position is very straightforward. In other words, we don't know who the money belongs to. So it's mamon hamutal besafek. It's not really mutal besafek, but in other words, we don't know. Okay, so make a division. Money can be divided, so you'll divide the property. Shmuel says no. Shuda de Dina, Rashi. Rashi over here says, Lefi ro'os eine hadayanim yatilo hazechus v'achova. At this point, we're going to have the judge's discretion. Judge is going to have to make a call, and it's going to be based on his discretion. Now, his discretion is going to be based on what?
Their discretion.
Right. No? So his discretion is going to be based on what? So we saw this earlier. This was also machlokas amongst the Rishonim. Exactly what he's going to be basing his discretion on. Rashi earlier says the discretion is going to be based on who he feels has more of a connection to the seller. In other words, obviously he's going to make a call, but it's going to be based on circumstantial evidence in terms of who the buyer is going to be. But Shmuel's of the opinion, Shuda Dedaina. So in other words, we're not going to split the land, but the judge is actually going to make a decision. So Lema Rav Damakar Amera. So now, okay, good. That's the machlokas between Rav and Shmuel. And now what the Gemara is going to attempt to do is give a little bit of svara. What's behind this machlokas between Rav and Shmuel of whether or not the land should be divided or whether or not the judge makes a discretion, it's judge's discretion. So Lema Rav Damakar Amera, Damar Eidech Hasi Mekarte. So the Gemara suggests maybe the argument goes as follows. We're going to see this again and again throughout Masechta Gittin, but here in Ksuvos, I think this is the first time in our Masechta that we are exposed to this idea. Right, when you write up a contract and you hand the contract over, what was the most legally significant aspect of that that created that transaction? And you basically have two options. So it's a machlokas tanaim, and you basically have two options. Your two options are Rav Meir, who says Eidech Hasi Mekarte. Rav Meir's of the opinion that the people who signed on the document, the people signing on the document, two signatories of the document, they are the ones effecting the transaction. Meaning, obviously, the deed is going to be handed over, but really, the truth of the matter is, the legal teeth to any document is going to be the signatories who are signing on the document. That's the opinion of Rav Meir. Rav Elazar, Eide Mesire Karte. Eide Rav Elazar is of the opinion that no. That even though it's true you're going to have signatures signing on the document, he doesn't argue with that point. But Rav Elazar says, but that's not what creates the legal reality. What creates the legal reality of a transfer is going to be when the deed is handed over. That's going to be the most significant legal moment of the transaction. Machlokes in Rami and Rav Elazar. Now, this machlokes is not limited to Gittin, although we're going to see it again and again throughout Masechta Gittin, but the truth of the matter is it's true by all other stars as well. The machlokes is true by all other stars. And so what the Gemara is proposing now is as follows. Rav says the land is divided. Why? Because he goes like Rav Meir. And what does that mean? And so what? Take a look at the bottom Rashi in the Amud. Rashi writes, Rav Meir d'Amar, le'inyan get edichisim e'ikar krisos. It's the signatures are creating that separation, the division between husband and wife. V'chein le'inyan asharos. And that's, again, as I pointed out, it's not just true by get, it's true by all asharos as well. V'elu she'em nechnum b'yom echad. Now, as far as the documents are concerned, they were dated the same date. There's no difference between the two. Over Malcolm Shane Kosher shows. And obviously, there was no hours that were written on it. So from where we're standing right now, looking at these two documents, they are chronologically identical. So Galu Daitaita Data Makpina Malakodum Chavero, Beafilu Zeshachar Vizem Mincha, Ain't Zogeva Yosem Izer. And so therefore, the documents are equally weighted. In other words, because the signatures are giving the document its force, and because they were dated the same date, and because there were no hours, so therefore one document cannot be viewed any better, any stronger than the other document.
Can you answer your question to witnesses?
You can do all that. I'm saying, but this is what you have right now. All you have right now are two documents and dated the same date. Hilkach, my shuda d'dani ikala memer. Ein adam yachol liyafas kol choshol zemishol zeh. So at this point in time now, it's a stalemate. The two documents are legally the same, so we are now arrived at a stalemate, so that's why Rav says you divide it. That's what the Gemara is proposing on behalf of Rav. Shmuel the Amar, we're on the top of Tzadi Dalman base, and Shmuel will tell you, no, Kareb Elazar. He holds like Reb Elazar Damar Eidim Mesira Karte, that it's the Eidim Mesira. So in other words, despite the fact that the documents were signed, but that's not the legal significance of a document. It was when it was handed over. Okay, so when it was handed over, so obviously that means that one document was handed over before the other. There is a way, but it is most unlikely that the two documents are going to be handed over simultaneously. One was handed over the other. One document is stronger than the other. Now, at this juncture in time, we don't know which one it is, but one is stronger than the other. And that led Shmuel to the conclusion that, okay, so that means that really one has a stronger claim. Who is going to make that determination? Shuda Dadaina. That's going to be the judge's discretion to determine. Okay. The Gemara now is proposing that this is the machlokas between Rav and Shmuel. The Gemara says, "Lo, the kula hamakar Rabbi Elazar." The Gemara says, "No." Let's suggest that really both Rav and Shmuel subscribe to the viewpoint of Rav Elazar. Hacha ba'akam iflgi, Rav sever chaluka adifa, Shmuel sever shuda d'daini adifa. So, in other words, look, really one document is stronger than the other because we're going like Rav Elazar. But maybe over here, what's at issue is good. We have a conflict, and we need resolution. And maybe the issue between Rav and Shmuel is, what's better resolution? Is better resolution a division of the property? So therefore, I know one of them is better. I just don't have a way of determining which one's better. Conflict, resolution, divide. That would be the opinion of Rav. And Shmuel would say, no, I don't believe that's a better conflict resolution. Better conflict resolution is, if you know one of the documents is stronger, and again, both Rav and Shmuel subscribing to Rebbe Lazar, Eidim Mesira Karte, one of the documents is stronger than the other, so now the discretion and the assignment to one of the two is a better resolution, being that we know that one of them is stronger than the other. So the Gemara says, look, in order to entertain this idea, so you have to assume that Rav holds like Rebbe Elazar, but the Gemara is going to provide evidence that that's not so. The Gemara quotes a statement of Rav Yehuda quoting Rav, who says that the halacha does in fact follow like Rebbe Elazar, but only as it relates to Gittin, meaning in the world of Get and creating a divorce between husband and wife. So there, Eina Mesira Karte. But there and only there do we follow the halakha like Rav Elazar. Like I said a moment ago, the machlokas between Rav Elazar and Rav Meir is a universal machlokas. It applies to all documents. But Rav feels, for reasons which when we get to Git we'll explore a little bit more, but Rav feels that the only time that we paskin like Rav Elazar is only in the world of Get. By all other shtaros, we paskin like Rabbi Meir. So halakha Rav Elazar begin. So, Kiyam Rizik HaMadish Shmuel Amar B'Sharos. Now, Shmuel disagrees. Shmuel says, no, the halacha is like Rav Elazar, both by get and by shtar as well. Good. But what comes out very clearly is that Rav doesn't agree with that. Rav says that when it comes to Shtaros, Allah is like Rabbi Meir. So Mechlal Rav Savar Bishtaros, Rav Savar Bishtaros. Alone. Ella Machvar to Rav Karab Meir, Shmuel Karab Elazar. So Gemara says, okay, so we're going to go back to our original proposal. Rav holds like Rav Meir, Shmuel holds like Rav Elazar, and again, everything works out. So again, according to Rav, we're going to divide because Ede Chasime Karte, and because Ede Chasime Karte, the same date, hours weren't written, the Shtaros are equally strong. And so therefore, division. Shmuel's of the opinion like Rabbi Elazar, Ede Mysteri Karte, one of the documents was handed before the other. Right now, we currently don't know what that is, but shoot it to Dinah, the judges are going to make a call based on their discretion. The Gemara quotes the Braisa. The Braisa says that if I have two documents and they're dated the same day, what do? You divide. To Yufta de Shmuel. That's a Braisa. And that Braisa is difficult for Shmuel. I'm Malacha Shmuel. I'm Ani Rabbi Merhi. Banadamika Rabbi Lazar. But Shmuel says that's not a problem. Look, we just pointed out that the machlokas between Rav and Shmuel is really predicated on the machlokas between Rav Elazar and Rav Meir. So you have a braisa that tells me that we divide. Good, that braisa is holding like Rabbi Meir. I don't hold like Rabbi Meir. So e Rabbi Meir in Masefa, the Gemara says, but wait 1 second. Gemara says, look at the end of the braisa. Kasav la'echer umasav la'acher. Zeh shemasav lo kana. So he writes up one document, right, and he doesn't hand it over until he writes a second document, and he hands over that second document. So Zesha Masalo Kana. So the one he handed it over, that's the one who acquired. Good. What is that second half of the Braisa telling you? That even though he wrote the one document before the other, the one that he handed over is the one that creates the transaction. Why? Because the author of the Braisa is not Rabbi Meir. The author of the Braisa is Rabbi Lazar. So the Braisa is clearly going like Rabbi Lazar. V'Rabbi Meir Amai Kana Hamar Ede Chasime Karte. So the Gemara says, look, if the author of the Braisa was Rabbi Meir, so the writing of the document, the signing of the document, that should create the legal transaction. That should create a kinyan. Okay. So the Gemara says the author of that Braisa is not Rabbi Lazar, but rather the author of the Braisa is not Rabbi Meir; it's rather Rabbi Lazar. So we're kind of back at the drawing board. Meaning, so now that we know that the author of the Braisa is Rabbi Elazar, that Ede Mysteri Karte, and yet the Braisa says, divide. Okay, so really what we have to do is we have to come up with a Svara for Shmuel. Either a Svara for Shmuel, or at least a source for Shmuel. So the Gemara says, Tanahi. Gemara says, fine, I'll come up with a source for Shmuel based on the following Braisa. Detanya. V'chachamim amim yachloku. The Chachamim say that if you have two deeds and they come out dated the same date, and each one is claiming rights to that land, so the Chachamim say you divide the land. Fine. V'kan amru. Fascinating. And here they say, now I'm a little bit unclear. The Kan Amru is referring to us and Bava. It's a little bit strange, meaning if this is part of the Braisa, usually Braisas are authored, edited, and learned in Eretz Yisrael. So I'm a little bit confused in terms of this is part of the Braisa, not part of the Braisa. That's a very technical point I'm making, but still. Kan Amru, Mashi Yirtza, Ashlish Yaseh. And here we said, Mashi Yirtza, Ashlish Yaseh, the custodian does whatever he feels is right. I'm sorry, the case over here, let me just present the case. This is a case that's brought up at the end of the first parak of Gittin. Okay. And the case over here goes as follows. A person hands over an amount of money to a shlish, a messenger, and he's given very specific instruction, and that is, I want you to give it to so-and-so. And he goes, and he does a little bit of research, and he comes out that after travel and after ready to deliver it, so the recipient dies. Yachzur l'mishalech. So now he goes back to the mishalech, the one who sent him the money. He said, look, you asked me to be the courier and to deliver it, but he died. And then as he goes back, what happens? The mishalech is also dead. So meis mishalech. Yachzur l'yorshim. So now the problem is as follows. So now we don't have a lot of information. We know that the sender wanted to give it to the receiver. And right now the money is currently in the hands of the shlish and in the hands of the courier. But here's the problem. The problem is that the recipient is dead and the beneficiary is dead. And now should I hand it back to the yorshim of the beneficiary or should I hand it back to the yorshim of the recipient? We don't know. In other words, we don't know. Right? There was no clause written in his instruction. If that person's dead, give it to his next of kin.
Why can't we argue that Shliach as the recipient agent?
Okay, it's an interesting argument. Good. It's a good argument.
But the money has not been transferred.
But what Ben's asking is that should be transferred through the principle of Zechiah. Okay, good. It's a good point. So what do you do? So the Chachamim say the money gets divided. And here we say, no, discretion. The shlish is going to use his discretion. It's interesting. Here we're having the shlish use his discretion. Okay, right? But maybe it means the court over here. But anyway, but you see in this brisa that shuda d'dayna, meaning we use discretion. We don't divide the money. Good. So at least now we have a brisa that supports the position of Shmuel that in a scenario where we don't know who should be the beneficiary of the money, and two people have equal claim to it. So shuda d'dayna. So in other words, discretion is going to be the choice of decision.
Why does the second person have an equal claim?
Because the second person was the designated recipient. Now he died, but maybe what the giver was really wanted to do was give it to the family. Okay. Ima de Rami Barchama Kasvinal and Nichsei. The mother Rami Barchama is writing over property to her kids. So Kasvinal and Nichsei Rami Barchama. Okay, so the first thing she does is she writes a document. She says, I'm gifting this to my son Rami Barchama, B'tzafra. And that is what she did in the morning. Le'orta, later that night, she thought about it a little bit more. Kasvina Lamar Ukva Barchama.
Same thing.
So she then wrote the property over to Mar Ukva, and that would be her other son. Okay, I imagine that a family tension would run a little bit higher now, as each son is claiming and making a very good claim that they were awarded the property. So Rami Barchama goes to Rav Sheshes and says, okay, here I am. Right now my brother's arguing with me over who the rightful owner of the land is. But let me give you a convincing argument. Mom gave it to me first. Okay. So Lakamad Rav Sheshes Ukmen Benachse. So Rav Sheshes says, good. So Rav Sheshes awarded Rami Barchama the property. Also, Mar Ukva Lakamad Rav Nachman. And then Mar Ukva goes to Rav Nachman. Okay, so he goes to his Rav, and his Rav happens to be Rav Nachman. Ukmen Benachse, and Rav Nachman awards him that property. So now what turns out now is that not only is this a machlokus between the brothers, but now it's turning into a machlokus between Rav Sheshes and Rav Nachman in terms of what the right ruling should be. Also, Rav Sheshes is coming to Rav Nachman. Okay, so these heavyweight Amoraim now are battling out who should be who is right. So Amarle Maitam Avad Marhachi. So Rav Nachman says to Rav Sheshes, what are you doing? So Amarle Maitam Avad Marhachi. With a counter question of, well, what are you doing? So, good. Good. Amar Lei de Kadim. So he says, Rav Sheshes says, I think I know what I'm doing. In other words, Rami Barchama was awarded the property first. I thought that's pretty straightforward. Amar Lei out to be Yushalayim Yasvin de Kasvin and Shaos. So to which Rav Nachman says to Rav Sheshes, slow down. Where do we live? We live in Yerushalayim. They write hours on the document. And by the way, this is one of the reasons why we're hearing the story now, aside from the fact that it has to do with what we've been discussing, is because that's what we learned in the Mishnah. We learned in the Mishnah that the minhag in Yerushalayim was not only to write the day and the date, but the minhag in Yerushalayim is to write the hours. So, but Rav Nachman says, good, that's the minhag in Yerushalayim. That's not our minhag. So, Elamar Maitam Avad Hachi. So now, question was given over to Rav Nachman. So why did you award it to the second brother? Amalei Shuda D'dayna. So Rav Nachman says, I'll tell you why. My discretion. Meaning, what happened? Two documents were presented to me. They were both dated the same date. So right now, let's assume, although this part I'm not sure, but let's assume the halacha is like Rabbi Lazar, Eidim Asiri Karta, but right now we don't know which one she awarded to. Shuda d'dayna, my discretion. Amalei ana nami shuda d'dayna. Really, judge's discretion. Rav Sheshes says, yeah, me too. I also use judge's discretion. Amalei chad d'dana d'ayana marlav d'ayana. So Rav Nachman says to Rav Sheshes, first of all, I'm a judge, you're not. So exactly what that means, I'm a judge, you're not, meaning they both lived in Bavel, but the as Rashi points out over here, that Rav Nachman was given authority by the Reish Galusa to go and adjudicate. And Rav Sheshes was not given this permission. So, Shuda D'Daina only is an argument, judge's discretion, when you're a judge. So, Rav Nachman says that's point number one. V'od mikar labetar sachi asislam. And also, Rav Nachman says to Rav Sheshes, let's be perfectly frank. Meaning, when I asked you what was the basis of your argument, you didn't start off by saying Shuda D'Daina. You started off by saying, well, I think he got it first. Okay, but that's not Shuda D'Daina. So, it's again, it's interesting. You could make the argument that issued a Dedina, meaning it was his discretion that he got it first. But apparently, in other words, Rav Nachman's arguing, no, you didn't use your quote unquote judge's discretion. You thought that the halach is very straightforward. You thought that Rami Bar Chama, who got it first, therefore should be entitled to it first. I'm using the authority of Shuda D'Daina, my judge's discretion, and therefore I award it to B over A.
How about the case before with the shliach? It wasn't the court.
I'm sensitive to that issue. I don't know what the answer is, but yeah, I hear you. Yeah, Danny.
It's the suffix when the actual star was given, right? The award of the Yerusha.
Yes and no. Meaning, that's contingent on the Rav Meir Rav Elazar debate, because according to Rav Meir, it's the Eidei Chasim Mekarteh, which means that really the documents are what's giving the force of the transaction, and they're both dated the same. So it's not the handing over, it's the dating of the document. So right, this part I'm not perfectly clear about. Meaning, are these Amarim Rav Nachman Rav Sheshes? Are they working within Rav Meir? Are they working within Rav Elazar?
What is that by Nachman's discretion based on?
So again, that goes. The Gemara throws out the term Shuda D'Daina very often. We've seen it already a number of times today. It doesn't tell us. The Gemara never tells us what discretion is based on. The Rishonim debate what it's based on. Rashi brings down earlier. We saw the Rashi earlier. Yeah. Discretion is going to be based on his intuitive reasoning of which one did he think had a better relationship.
When somebody gives a mother gave the gift, can she change her mind once the gift is given? Or
she
actually said that that's your gift.
Well, I mean, once she gives the gift and once she writes a document to do so. So that, generally speaking, creates a transaction. Mm-hmm. So
but once the gift is given,
yep.
The ownership is gone, right?
Right. I understand. Okay, I understand. But I mean, the Gemara doesn't give us any more details in terms of what each party argued, but I guess the other can argue that, look, his version of the story is that he came in the morning and I was later in the day. My version is just the opposite. Could be. Although that, again, that's a little bit of speculation on my part. Okay. Okay, there were two documents that came in front of Rav Yosef. Now, these two documents that came in front of Rav Yosef is, once again, they were titles, they were deeds on the same property. One was written for the first day of Nisan, v'chad havakasav b'Nisan, stama. And the other document didn't have a date, only had a month. And it was recorded as Nisan. So Rav Yosef said, okay, I think it should be awarded to the one who was written the 5th of Nisan, B'nechasim. Amalei Idach, so the other litigant said, V'ana Afsin? So he says, I understand, I should lose? So Amalei, he says, yeah, Ayad Chal Tachtona. So he says, yeah, you should lose. Because your title doesn't have a date. His title does have a date. And as far as your title, all it's saying is that it was sold to you in Nisan. Good, Nisan's a long month.
Right,
Ema Bar Chav Tes B'Nisanat. Could very simply say, yeah, it was sold to you in Nisan, the 29th day of Nisan. Now, we don't know, but that's exactly the point. So you right now are not in the driver's seat. He's in the driver's seat because I know definitively that it was sold to him on the 5th day of Nisan. Amar Lei V'Nichtav Li Mar Tirfa. So, I'm sorry, Mar Tirfa Mi'iyar V'Eilech. So, at least let me do the following. So, be Toref, meaning I paid money for that property. So, I should get some sort of reimbursement for that. Now, I understand that the document says Nisan. And I understand that if you dated anywhere in Nisan, so it may be earlier than when I actually bought it. So I get that. So I understand you're not going to write me a reimbursement letter going back to Nisan. But at least from the first day of ER, so I should get a reimbursement. So Amalei Yachli LaMemalach. So he says, no. because the lokeach, any future buyers who you're looking to collect from, so they could say to you, Chad ben Isanat. So he says, they could say to him, look, that's funny. You're looking for reimbursement. I can make the argument that you are actually the rightful owner of that land, of that disputed land. So, you're right. Why are you coming to me? In other words, that land that you disputed over, you could be the winner. Now, I know Rav Yosef didn't agree, but in other words, but look, let Rav Yosef make all the arguments he wants. You're coming and taking money from me? We know the rule. Hamotzi mechaver ol avaraya. You're coming to take money from me. You need absolute proof that that disputed land didn't belong to you. It may have been. It may have in fact belonged to you. So now, maitakante. So the Gemara says, okay. Now on this particular issue, so what do you do? Meaning that he's obviously looking for reimbursement. In other words, one land, two deeds of sale. So one of them paid money, and he got nothing for his money. So he wants a reimbursement. So he's going to go back to the buyer, and he's going to go back to the seller, and he's going to say, "Look, reimburse me." Seller says, "Look, I'd love to. I just don't have any money." Okay, good. So now I'm going to go after your lekuchos. Good. So, but what is he going to do? Because again, the lekuchos can say to him, "You're not right. You're the owner of the land." So I'm not mishubah to you. So what do you do? Ma'ita kante. Nichtavu hashar lahadadeh. So the Gemara says what you do is as follows. The two buyers, again, one of them is real, one of them is not, but both of them paid money for it. The two buyers are going to write a letter of authorization to one another. And with that letter of authorization, so that what allows them to do is that when the second guy, meaning the one who was not awarded the property, so when he's coming to collect for that money that he paid, and he's getting a reimbursement of that money, so he'll say to the lokech as follows, look, here I am. And I'm entitled to reimbursement. And so, meaning I'm going to have to take your property away from you. If you want to argue that I'm the owner of the land and the other person is the one who's entitled to the reimbursement, funny you should say that, takes out the harsha, takes out the letter of authorization, I'm speaking on his behalf as well. Okay, so, and I'm authorized to do so. So either way, you're gonna have to reimburse. Sadi Hamad Alf, we're in the top of the Amud, we're starting now the new Mishnah. Misha Hayanasui Beis Nashim. Okay, man is married to two women, Omachar Et Sadeho. And the husband sells the field. Okay, and let's describe the scenario in which, first of all, he did not marry them at the same time. He married them on two separate dates. The document is dated. Their ksuvos are dated in two different dates. Good. Everything at this point in time is really straightforward. This is the husband's only piece of property that he sold. And the kasur rishon lokeach. And now the first wife says to the buyer of the property, din udvarim ein li imecha. She says to the buyer as follows, look, I understand you're worried because my husband's selling you the property and I have a ksuva, so I have a lien on that property. I get it. I'm telling you right now, I like you. Nice guy. Known you for years. I'm not gonna go after you, and I'm not gonna collect. In the event that my husband dies or divorces me, so I'm going to recuse myself from that property. She is not, I'm going to be as clear as possible, she is not forgiving the lien, meaning it's not a waiver of ksuva. She's just simply saying, I'm not coming after you. Okay. So, dinu dvarim ein li imecha. Hashniya motziya malokeach. Now, in the event that the husband dies or divorces them, and so now, the second wife now has a lien. The first wife forgave. I got to be so careful how I say this. She didn't forgive her lien. She just simply recused herself. She said, "I'm not gonna take away the land from you." Okay, fine. Second wife says, "That's good. I'm happy. I'll take the land, which she's entitled to. She has a lien on that property. She's a second lien holder, but because the first one waived, wrote a waiver, so the second one now is going to collect the property. So far, so good." Now, Hashniya motziya malokeach v'arishona min hashniya. Now this is where it gets enjoyable. Now the first wife now turns to the second wife and says, "Okay, that's funny. You're a second lien holder. I'm a first lien holder. You took the property. I take it from you. Right. Now what gives her the right to do that? Because again, that's why I was trying to be very clear. The first wife was not forgiving the lien. She was not forgiving the obligation. All she was saying was, okay, is that I'm not taking it away from that guy. Okay, I'm not taking it away from that guy. I'm taking it away from my co-wife, who I never particularly like. As you can well imagine, I'm sure it's not easy to share a husband. 1 second, just give me a moment. I'm sorry. Now, the lokeach goes over to the first wife and says, you know, you have the property, but that's funny because you told me that you're not going to take the property away from me. And meanwhile, that's my property that you took. Now, I understand you didn't take it from me, but you recused yourself from taking it away from me. So in other words, right, by your stipulation, I'm now going to take the property away from you. Which then leads the second wife to go back and say, hey, that's funny, I have a lien on that property. So the second wife now is going to take that property because of the lien. Which is going to now mean that the first wife is going to say to the second wife, hey, I'm the first lien holder, and I'm going to take it from you. Now the truth of the matter is I can spend the rest of the day now, right, in this v'chozros chalila. And the Mishnah says, now you understand now, we've gone into a loop. Right, they're not...
What is the benefit for her to say...
There are no benefits over here. This is all strictly. It's not. I mean, she said it. She contracted that she's not going to take it away from that guy. Okay. So we've entered into a loop. There are a couple of loops throughout Shas. Right. They're always enjoyable. They're like, you know, they're mentally stimulating. But okay, great. The mental stimulation is fantastic. When all said and done, okay, we have a property now that's going in circles. So eventually what's gonna have to happen is someone's gotta give in. In other words, otherwise we are in an endless loop, so someone's gotta compromise. Okay, two of them have to compromise, three of them have to compromise. That part's not clear. Gemara doesn't explore that issue, but in other words, but there's got to be some compromise in order to open up the loop. V'chein b'chov v'chein isha v'balas chov. And then the Mishnah says there are two other scenarios in which this would apply as well, and probably tomorrow we're going to discuss those two other scenarios. V'chi kasvalei ma'ave. So the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. She wrote the words dinu dvarim, and the Gemara says, and good, I'm glad she did that. So what? V'hatanya, we learned. So hopefully you remember that once you're in a partnership, in order to transfer your shares, you have to transfer your shares. It's not enough to just simply say, I walk away. And if you say any type of that kind of terminology, the Brisa gives a number of examples, Ein li asad azu, Ein li esek ba, Yadim esulekes, these are all different examples of, I'd like to walk away. Legally, that is not a binding statement. Once you're in the partnership, you have to actually transfer the shares in order to transfer the shares. So, over here, they're also in a partnership. Meaning, she has a lien on that property and that's built on the ksuva. It's based on the ksuva. So what is she saying? I'm walking away. That language doesn't mean anything once you're in the partnership. So the Gemara says, okay, kinyan was done. So in other words, it wasn't just simply she wrote a clause saying I'm walking away, but also she's ratifying it with a kinyan. So v'chi kanamayade mayhavi teimanachas ruchas isalabali. Gemara says, okay, great. Great. So now we've dealt with the legal issue of the language isn't good. So the Gemara says, yeah, you're right. The language by itself is no good, but ratified with the kinyan, it's good. The Gemara says, but now there's another obstacle that we have to go over and that we have to cross, and that is the following. Can't the wife at a later point in time say, look, I know I said I'm not going to take the property away from you, but you know what? It made my husband happy. And really, my chief mission in life is to make my husband happy. So the correct, obviously. So in other words, I didn't say it because I really wanted to recuse myself from the property. It's just that my husband sold it to you. I know that he was worried that I'm holding a note against the property. So you know what? I said it. It made him happy. No, meaning it's an. Your point is good. It's like an umdana. It's like we assess the situation, and what we're saying is that is a very legitimate claim that she can make. So milo tanan lakach mina ish v'chazav lakach mina isha mechavato. Let's say you buy land from the man, and then you go to the woman. You say, okay, can I buy it? And Rashi over here describes that we're talking about where this particular property was earmarked against her ksuva, and so the buyer knows that really he's got two people to contend with: the husband and the lien holder, which happens to be the wife. So he goes to the husband, he buys it from the husband, and then he goes over to the lien holder, the wife, and he says, okay, we're good. I don't want to buy it from you. She says, yeah, we're good. What's the ruling of the Braisa? Mekha batal. No, we're not good. And why are we not good? And the reason why we're not good is because she can at a later point in time say, look, you got me to concede. I conceded for one reason, just to make my husband happy. And therefore, that is a strong argument, the Braisa says. It's a strong enough argument where it allows her at a later point in time to say, I simply didn't mean it. So Amrav Zera, Amrav Chisla, Lokasha, Amrav Yehuda, Detanya. So the Gemara says this issue of whether or not a wife can make such an argument, even though the argument is being articulated at a point in time, whether or not she can make such an argument is actually machlokas tanayim. And let's go through the brisa. Kasav l'rishav alo chasma lo, l'sheni v'chasma lo. Let's say the husband sold to the first buyer, and she didn't sign off on it. And let's say he sold to the second buyer, and now she signed off on it. Ivda ksuvasa div Reb Meir. According to Reb Meir, she has forfeited her ksuva. Rav Yehuda amar yechol yishatam, nachas ruach, hasisa labali, atam alachem alai. And according to Rav Yehuda, no. Her argument is very simple. Her argument is, what are you talking about? I know I agreed. You know why I agreed? Make my husband happy. The Rebbe, now the Gemara fills out the details. And that's the following. We have a Mishnah here in Ksuvos. We have a Mishnah there in Gittin. Rebbe saw some lahachak Reb Meir. So as far as our Mishnah over here in Ksuvos is concerned, so Rebbe followed the viewpoint of Reb Meir. What did Reb Meir say? Reb Meir said that if she signed off, she signed off. And that would describe our Mishnah over here. And she cannot at a later point in time say, Nachas Ruach HaSisa Labali, I was just looking to make my husband happy. The Hasam, and over there in the Mishnah Gittin, Rebbe Yehuda, and Rebbe Meir, I'm sorry, Rebbe Yehuda Anasi, when editing the Mishnayos in Gittin, follows Allah like Rebbe Yehuda.
How can you argue with that? Because on the first seller, she didn't say that. She didn't agree. So how can she say she
wants
to make her happy?
Stay, no? Correct. Stay tuned. Come back tomorrow, which I know you will. Okay. Me too. I'm also hoping. So come back tomorrow, and the Gemara is going to answer your question tomorrow. Okay. Very good. Okay. We'll stop over here. Tomorrow we pick it up with Amara Papa. Okay. We'll do more. Okay. Today we finished up the discussion regarding the. The case of the four wives. Talked a lot today about Shuda Dedaine, about the judge's discretion. What is the better conflict resolution, division or judge's discretion? Machlokes between Rav and Shmuel. And now we started the Mishnah on Sadi Hay that dealt with the case of the endless loop.